This is Relativity Football. I'm Theo Lloyd-Hughes and I'm here with my sister, Flo. How's it going, Flo?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad. Flo calling in from London.
I am. Sunny London. It's 30 degrees today. Getting the last of that September sunshine before autumn hits us and things get a little bit dark and gloomy.
Yeah, it's quite cloudy where I am in New Orleans, but we've just been spared Hurricane Sally. So before we do any more podcasting, just
Mustang
shout out
Sally.
Mustang Hurricane Sally. Lots of love out there to everyone on the Alabama coast who is being affected by Hurricane Sally, and obviously Hurricane Laura and in Lake Charles as well, you know, thinking of you. What a bumper weekend of football last weekend, both this side of the Atlantic and yours. I was watching a bit of all the games, and as I know you were, but I was kind of watching West Ham implode in London and seeing Chelsea, you know, have their way with Bristol. And I just, it kind of reminded me of when we were kids and we used to play in the back garden. And I was kind of thinking, if you were 9-0 down to me, or I was 9-0 down to you, what do you think the scene would have looked like?
I would have had a huge tantrum and then I would have lost it and basically just played sabotage and tried to slide tackle you or shove you into a wall and basically ruin the fun for everyone. So I respect the West Ham players for not doing that, because I can't imagine what it must feel like to be losing that badly.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I guess Gilly Flatty kind of tried to shout at and give it back to the ref. I don't know if you would have done that to Mum. Or you would have just gone straight
to the
door.
I would have done.
No offsides.
Yeah, exactly.
Garden,
what are you talking about, ref?
Yeah, it was a tough one. Do you have any things to kind of... did you feel anything? I know there's been a lot of conversations about these 9-goal matches. I felt like at least Chelsea gave us something a little different with the 9 different goal scorers and some absolutely fabulous goals, Benil Harder's in particular. But I thought the Arsenal one was maybe a bit more depressing. For kind of the state of the league.
Yeah, I think it is a bit more depressing than the Arsenal-West Ham game, because West Ham are actually a team that have been looking to invest. Only now, I think 2 years into this project, putting a lot of money into it. They've done a big training ground refurbishment recently, moving into a new stadium. It was a pilot event. It was really exciting for the 1,000 fans that got to go in. Also, actually, really great video on the Football Supporters Association today. And if you love really like niche content about people's experiences going to events and the logistics of it, which I love, then you will love this
video.
We're
here for that. This is close to being a siblings logistics podcast.
But. Yeah, that's a separate podcast, relatively logistics. Yeah, you can get a sort of play-by-play of how the whole thing worked with the e-tickets, with the masks, how they got into the stadium, everything. So there's a little like 10-minute video with a West Ham fan. But yeah, that's why I think was more worrying for me, is that they've actually got a vision and they've got a really experienced manager who's won WSL titles, also been at Chelsea. And you'd think, and managed in the US as well. That's a little bit worrying, is how they're getting thumped so by such a big score. I think with teams like Bristol and Birmingham, it kind of makes a bit more sense, because they are struggling to get financial backing and investment in their teams, especially with Birmingham. The men's team was struggling a bit financially, so that has a knock-on effect. And I feel like their managers are a bit more frustrated with the options they've got. Whereas I didn't feel that with West Ham. I feel like a lot of the recruitments that Matt Beard's brought in, you know, like Kenza Dali, big name.
Great goal at the weekend.
Who scored the only, West Ham's only goal, was a fantastic goal. Like those are big names. And he's brought in, like, and Gilly as well. That's a big name in the women's football world. So yeah, I think it's a little bit worrying, but they had those big score lines last year. They lost 8-1 to Chelsea, so it's nothing new. But after watching the documentary, you do fear a little bit as well about the impact that this could have on the team for the rest of the season.
Matt Beard said after the game, you know, it's very frustrating to see these referee decisions. He kind of tried to take the pressure off his players a little bit and said, you know, people are going to lose their jobs if we have more refereeing like that. Do you think the refereeing is particularly bad across the WSL, or do you think it was bad in that game? I mean, I know Gilly was sent off for complaining about the offside decision watching it back, watching it that game live, I didn't think it was that harsh. It was sort of on a knife edge. Do you think there should be more leniency for the way players talk to refs, especially captains, or do you think, you know, some of the refereeing has been poor in regards to offsides or fouls?
I think with dissent, it's difficult because a couple of years ago, I think the FA in general did try and tell referees to get really strict on it. And obviously, we don't really know exactly what is said. Gilly's put out a tweet since.
Love the tweet. Such a great tweet.
But yeah, I guess you'd have to look in the report to see what the referee put down was said to her. I think
she'd already booked Rachel Daly for dissent about 15, 20 minutes before it happened. So give the ref, you know, the ref was out there warning players not to talk back.
Yeah, and I think refereeing is such a subjective thing. And this is one of the issues with VAR is there's so much on the pitch that is subjective, and dissent being one of them, penalties sometimes being one of them, and other decisions with red cards as well. So it is really difficult for the referees. But I think taking this game out of the equation, I think Matt Beard might have been saying that as well, to probably take some of the responsibility away from his players and to not heap too much negativity. But at the end of the day, regardless of what happened with Chile, they shouldn't have conceded 9 goals after that. That's pretty embarrassing. So I can understand why he's done that. And I probably would have done the same thing, because they're probably feeling a bit shit and sorry for themselves. So saying, you know, it's the referees, it is probably a good strategy. But in fairness, this is an issue that is happening every single week in the league. And we saw it with the first game of the season that was on BT Sport with, was it Villa's disallowed goal?
Yeah, the first goal, yeah.
Yeah. And so it's nothing new in terms of offsides. I thought, like you said, I thought the offside was really tight. And
yeah, I mean, Sam Kerr's goal, I would argue, was just as offside against Man United. And you didn't really see Casey Stoney complaining about that.
I think some of the other issues we've seen in the league haven't necessarily been offsides, but more just the standard when it comes to fouls. We obviously have had a lot of issues, I think, before with people, and I know they have this in the NBL, people basically getting knocked for six and not even getting a caution or anything. So I think it's more a general issue, and most people result in saying we need full-time referees, you know, and that's the way we're going to solve
it. That's a great point. I think that's been really well said, and I think you can't really expect necessarily professional refereeing without professional referees. And with the strength of the league now, it really feels like the natural next step. On the subject of big fouls, or kind of, how did you put it? People getting knocked over?
People getting knocked for six receiving a caution.
Claudia Walker's equaliser for Birmingham.
Yes, I did. Yeah.
I thought that was about as knocked for six as you can get.
You know what? I was doing the highlights on the edit for that with my good friend Lee, who I've been working with now.
Shout out, Lee. Great work.
Really, really great guy. And we were watching that over and over again. We couldn't stop laughing because, was it Galton or Turner who was defending Turner. It's like all the weight from her body and all the strength just leaves her. And she's like one of those wacky, inflatable, flailing arm
flailing tube women.
Yeah. She has no strength, and she just completely tumbles over, even though on paper she's a bigger, stronger player than Walker. And I couldn't stop laughing every single time we watched the edit through. It just made me laugh so much because she just completely tumbles backwards out of nowhere.
Well, Katie Zellum gets caught out as well, like at the back of the midfield for the ball. And
that was a talk about referee moments. Zellum's handball last season is one of the all-time, I think, WSL low referee moments. I'm sure you can see it on, I think a lot of people laughed about it on Twitter. So you can head there if you want to recreate some of that magic.
I was impressed with Birmingham's tenacity or the knocking for six. But I do think on this subject of parity or the league as a whole, I still get the most excited about the Women's Super League when watching Man United. Seeing that second half comeback, seeing how dominant they were after kind of Birmingham had come back into them. And this is right now with a small squad without necessarily superstars. I really, really love watching this Man United side and seeing Katie Zellum knock another free kick in, a third free kick in 16 games, and Ella Toon get goals. Zellum and Toon are kind of from Lancashire and from the area, and they've all come up with this team from the Championship. And I just think seeing this team grow is potentially, you know, aside from all the kind of part-time NWSL superstars and international stars, I think seeing what's happening with United, obviously a big, big club, but I like to believe that this is where the league is going. continuity, building young players, even from the area. Do you think we could see another club like Man United develop, or do you think kind of what's going on there is sort of a class of 2018 one-off?
I think there's pockets of it at other clubs. I think before maybe January of this year and this summer, Chelsea had been doing that a fair bit, to their credit. But in recent years, that's kind of taken a back seat. So Drew Spence, Hannah Blundell, both came through Chelsea youth. There's definitely others there too that have popped out of my brain. But yeah, there's pockets of it at other clubs. But I guess that, you know, we touched on it last week about the homegrown player rule. I guess that's one of the reasons why, is they are a little bit worried that we'll see less of that. And I think with Manchester United, it's great to see that they are doing that, because they only recently relaunched, but they've got a big kind of investment and vision behind it, and it's paying off. It'll be interesting to see how that impacts when Preston Heath come in, obviously only for a season. But I was really excited to see Russo. I thought she had such a big impact.
And she may be from London, but she's a Man United fan, as the commentator kept telling us.
Yeah.
Just like everyone else in London.
Exactly. It was welcome to our life. Growing up, it was always Man U. But yeah, I think one half, she came on at half time and she had such a big impact. She had an assist, had a couple of chances, and also had a role in one of the, I think, in the fifth goal as well. And I'm really excited to see her play.
She had a nice little turn. She kind of cut the ball back in. She almost played a bit like a false nine. Obviously, they kind of played that 4-2-3-1. And I thought Russo was good at coming into the channels, even as one up top. And I think one up top's really hard to play. But Jackie Cronin is a really, really great engine. And Hayley Ladd came on at halftime as well, who I think after Birmingham had got two goals, Stoney just felt like she needed to shore up. And I thought actually that just worked really, really well, having one player sit and then Jackie Cronin was able to kind of do all the running.
And we couldn't quite work out what happened to Lauren James. Did we ever get to the bottom of that?
No, she wasn't You texted me yesterday. I know she'd been dealing with a knee injury during lockdown, but she did play against Chelsea and came on and made a nice impact. But I assume it was either aggravated, something to chase up with Casey Stoney.
She didn't do the TV interview afterwards. So
did you give her a reason?
Nope, don't know. Didn't
just
do it.
I know
she did put out a tweet yesterday, which I love, retweeted it, about wearing masks, washing your hands, protect your families. So I don't know if it was COVID related. She doesn't really want to mix with a lot of other people. I really don't know, but we did.
I love Casey Stoney so much. I text Gaz, Flo. It's an inside joke to
my alter ego
on another episode. I text Flo regularly being like, Casey Stoney is going to lift the World Cup for England. 2027. Does that sound right? 2027. Casey Stoney will be England manager and will win the World Cup.
I think a lot of people were keen on her. There was talk of her replacing Neville, but I think some people felt it was a little bit too early. And I think with all the backing and some of the quality they have, maybe people were expecting a bit more from them last year, even though it was their first season in WSL.
I don't know how you could ask for more than like fourth place and, you know, good defensive record. And
I think this season the expectation is very high. Obviously the situation with cups and stuff has got a bit weird, but I think they need to really be challenging for a final of one of the cup competitions and push City and Arsenal a bit more.
On the subject of challenging, do you think City will be worried that, you know, even this quick into the season, they might not be challenging for number one spot? I would argue that the performance of the season so far was that Brighton performance. Really, really, really incredible. Obviously, you know, so much has been said about Hope Powell. We don't need to, you know, turn this into a Hope Powell podcast. But I just thought it was so inspiring to see such a well-organized team, just absolutely everyone stuck to their test. Rebecca Stott, you know, we talk about, again, parity, the league being good as a whole, big signings, but Brighton were able to bring in Rebecca Stott and Denise O'Sullivan internationally, two, you know, big players. And I thought they did a really, really good job on Sunday. And there was probably two chances City could have scored. Ellen White in particular will be really gutted that she didn't score that one-on-one. But otherwise, you know, I don't think Brighton gave him much of a sniff. You know, there was the one chance as well that, you know, maybe was over the line going back to refereeing. But I don't know, were you impressed with Brighton? Do you feel like That is something we could see more of from Brighton or other teams, is kind of like troubling City who are not scoring goals particularly freely.
Yeah, I think it's the perfect counter argument to the, you know, the gap is so big.
The game's gone.
Yeah, these games, these teams can't compete and it's all about a mini league, because Brighton showed that that's definitely not true. A pretty modest team who are a bit of an enigma. I feel like no one can quite work them out.
They're organized. I feel like
they're organized, but they struggle to score. They struggle to score goals.
But they've kind of they've done what they've done. You know, I think they were meant to upset teams and keep it tight. I mean, they lost that game 5-0 to City last year, so to get 0-0 is huge.
I guess the worrying thing for City is, we've talked about this, how tight and small the league is. There's only 12 teams in the league. So if you drop points, it has such a big impact on your chances of winning the title. And those games against Chelsea and Arsenal are basically title deciders. And there's a lot of pressure to put that on yourself early on. I mean, those games are big anyway, but now if they're going to have any chance of coming close, and a lot of people thought they were going to be in the hunt because of the way they've recruited. Obviously, it's Taylor's first season in charge. This is a real blow, and I think it will give them a bit of a confidence knock. Sorry, are you going to say about Hope Powell?
Well, just that I think she needs to get extra credit for the way she set up her players and drilled them in. Like, I don't think we think about sometimes as, you know, Bristol, like, could they have parked the bus or whatever? But like, it takes more than just putting players back. And I thought what was so impressive about Brighton is they only committed 9 fouls. They had 9 fouls last week, 9 fouls this week, which outside of City and Chelsea is the lowest in the league. So we're talking about clean, structured defensive football that doesn't just rely on clattering players. City only had an XG of 2. So, you know, on XG, it would have been like 2-0 or 2.5 goals. And I think seeing how they're able to like not give away fouls despite only having 30% in possession is just so impressive. And I think it was a defensive masterclass. They didn't just ride their luck. They didn't just, you know, clatter them. They didn't just kind of park the bus. And I want to keep giving Brighton so much credit.
I want to ask, because do you think that Arsenal's two incredible performances, 6-1, 9-1, do you think, based on that, do you think Arsenal are going to win the title?
I think they're going to score the most goals, but I don't think we've seen enough Chelsea, City, Arsenal head-to-head. I do think Arsenal are definitely, without any distractions in the Champions League as well, I would give them as much chance as anyone else, but I think it's too close to call right now.
But what I want to say, Reading bouncing back.
Yes,
off the back of that defeat, which I think people were quite worried. Obviously, we have touted
Reading. Well, it touches on what you were saying about teams investing, getting battered.
Yeah, and actually how it's a bit more of an irregularity than anything, because we both in our sort of preview had Reading, you know, pushing for top four. And I think that was a bit of a shock to all of us. But this week the weekend just gone was something we're more used to seeing, which was a dominant performance, creating so many chances. They had 13 shots on target, really controlled the game. Frustrating not to get that clean sheet.
Farrah Williams masterclass.
Yeah, I mean, she was...
Can we talk about the Panenka?
Yeah, we can. I mean, legendary. What? From...
I went straight on YouTube and was trying to watch all her past penalties, and I couldn't find another Panenka. So to be 36 years old, deep into your kind of WSL, I mean, at this point, folklore, myth, legendary kind of odyssey, to then pull out that Panenka, I thought that was just absolute class.
Oh, she's so great. And she was doing her classic thing where she just has decided she's going to have a pop from 35 yards. None of them came off, but I mean, you might as well have a go. And they had so many chances. I think that was one of my favourite performances of the weekend. And I know, obviously, Villa are newcomers and yet to get a point on the board. But I just thought it was such a complete performance.
Yeah, I think Villa will be really frustrated. They had more of the ball than they did against City, but their pass completion was the lowest of any team at the weekend, with 61%, down from 71% against City. So I think to play, quote-unquote, kind of weaker opposition and to not play your best, I think that's really frustrating. I think something which is going to be interesting to watch about Reading, when I didn't watch that game live, I had to watch it back. but I noticed that they kind of play a diamond with Pharrell Williams doing all the running and the playmaking from the back of it. And I just wonder, against teams like Man United, Everton, and even Spurs that play with a five-person midfield, whether or not Reading might get exposed. Because Villa were playing the 4-3-3, same as last week. And I think it really suited Reading. And so I just wonder whether or not Reading are matched up for those kind of other second tier teams. Did you see anything from Everton? I know you were watching that game for the BBC. Did you see anything that game?
It was a bit of a boring game, not going to lie to you.
Professional.
Spurs were quite stale. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Alex Morgan sort of works with that. I have a feeling that the rest of the team are going to give her the ball a lot and like expect quite a lot of her. She's only here till the end of December, so she hasn't got
I was just going to pick you up on that. I feel like I read something else that she's here for the whole season.
I'm very confused by this, and I've had a long back and forth with Becky about it. Shout out, Becky.
Shout out, Becky.
Because on press releases and stuff, it says end of the year. And then Becky was saying she interpreted that as end of the season. BBC Sport website said December.
Okay, so maybe we'll go with the BBC. I definitely read...
It's hard, though.
It might be an American outlet, but I definitely read one outlet that said the 2021 season.
I think Meg at The Athletic put end of the year, but some people have interpreted that as meaning end of the season.
Well, Mewis and Lavelle is end of the season.
So I think that she's the only one that's to the end of December. And I don't know if it's based on family or whatever, because obviously her situation's a bit more unique. But it does seem very short. But as far as I am aware, I spent so long yesterday Googling it because I was like, this can't be true. She can't be here for 3 months or 4 months. But yeah, that seems like the situation. But yeah, I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of expectation on her. We're not going to go that deep into the Morgan situation because people like Meg at The Athletic. And
go read Meg. Meg's amazing.
And yeah, so many people are really going to go deep into it. But for those that don't know who she is, who are maybe new to women's football, huge US All-American girl who is, you know, the poster girl for women's soccer, and children literally scream when in her presence, like One Direction concerts. And when I was in France at the World Cup, the crowd sung her happy birthday on her birthday. So that's the kind of impact this person has. She's a global superstar.
Do you want my take on Alex Morgan?
I would love your take. My take is maybe a bit harsh, so I'll save that for the BTS.
Save that for the relatively logistics podcast. So Alex Morgan for me, and this is an easy metaphor because of her association, it's sort of like the Taylor Swift of football.
Oh, yeah. And she's like best mate to Taylor Swift, so it makes sense. Yeah.
And so she's had her, you know, she's had her red, she's had her 1989. She kind of had a bad reputation period, winning the World Cup, coming back to play for Orlando Pride. Orlando Pride are kind of like a bit of a joke team in the NWSL, but maybe that's harsh. Her red period would have been winning the title with Portland Thorns, and then 1989 could arguably be her loan to Lyon. So now we're getting kind of late Alex Morgan, and I'm just wondering whether or not we're going to see her time at Spurs is going to be a bit like folklore. You know, she's kind of into herself, trying to figure things out.
I quite like folklore. I quite enjoyed it. It was a good album. So
if
that's what she's going to give me, then I'm up.
But that's what I'm saying.
I'm worried it's going to be more like when Carly Lloyd came to play for Man City and it was a bit of a damp squib. Ooh. But I think it's awesome. And I think I didn't think the rumors were true, because I thought, no way, because of her family situation, which who am I to write off someone just because they recently had a kid on the other side of the world?
Oh, a child during COVID is maybe slightly different, but
yeah. But you know, she comes from good stock, being alongside Sydney Leroux, who is now back playing after having, you know, her second
Emmy
child.
Rodriguez as well, absolutely bored out in the
Challenge Cup. I think it seems to be quite common in the NWSL. We've had a couple of mums come back. Katie Chapman came back to play for Chelsea, and she's got three kids, so it does happen. But I think it's really exciting. But in terms of that game against Everton, yeah, Spurs were pretty stale. They just this lacked so much creativity. Gemma Davidson, who I sort of thought would bring more this season after spending a lot of last season out because of injury, just hasn't really done much. They look solid and organised defensively.
Alana Kennedy, I think, has been a great addition in front of the
And she's a big presence, and she was working hard. I think this is sort of what Alex Morgan will do too, is she's kind of like, oh, well, if no one else is going to do it, I'll bloody do it. And she just wants to be involved in everything. She wants the ball. She wants to take all the set pieces. She's big. She gets in the box. But Everton just had way too much quality for them. They never really had to sort of like step out of second gear. They had lots of early chances they didn't make the most of. Haley, Razzo. So I say her last name? I think it's Razzo.
Razzo.
Had a lot of good chances.
Well, the goal, I really recommend.
Govan didn't play, so I
think Govan came on for the last 15. But
oh,
yeah.
Right, okay.
Govan's played like 35 minutes across two games. She obviously got a goal in the first game, but they're very much leaving Govan kind of, they're letting her rest. I don't know
but
why.
Sorensen, but who came on at halftime, got the assist. She also played a big role in that first win against Bristol. And Izzy Christensen got a goal, which is great to see. So I think it was a great win for Everton, and it just builds on their stock this season.
Yeah, and I think Everton are sharing the love. They've rotated the players well. I really recommend, I mean, there's a lot of great goals. Miedema's, you know, scored another screamer, although I don't want to go too deep into Arsenal. But I really recommend going back and watching that Everton goal, because it's in transition, and Spurs' defence, sadly, just can't keep up. Neville has come, is on the wrong wing, and Percival gets caught out. And you see Christensen scores it, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. You see Christensen point out to Sorensen. So she tells Razzo, oi, play in Sorensen. She's in space on the left because Percival hasn't tracked back. And then Razzo plays it to Sorensen, and then Christensen goes and finishes it off. And it's like watching, you know, a great theatre director or sort of a quarterback. It's just, Christensen was just completely in her element. So it's a good goal to go and watch back. Anything else from the weekend you wanna bring up there?
We're not going to go too deeply into Chelsea, but if you do want to go, you know, balls deep into Chelsea, then you can on Frank Kirby Fight Club podcast.
Yeah, really recommend that podcast to really, really knowledgeable Chelsea fans that bring a lot of fun and analysis to the game. So yeah, Fran Kirby's Fight Club, Twitter, and kind of on where you get your podcasts. I'll do a quick NWSL roundup.
Please do.
Houston Dash returned to play. Shout out anyone that watched this game on Saturday. It would have been about 8:30 p.m. kickoff on Twitch worldwide, or 2:30.
Is this Central. The game they had fans in? Or is that not?
No,
yet?
that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
But it was an amazing game. I don't know if you saw any of the highlights. 4-3. I'm sure you saw Dabina's goal. Goals.
Yes, incredible.
Yeah, I was covering the game for the website, and if you didn't see it, the Dash were sort of incredible for 45 minutes. Could have had two goals off the, you know, right off the bat, kind of RB Salzburg, Liverpool, Dortmund, just like high press, winning the ball so quickly, having so many chances, just winning it on top of the North Carolina box. And then they were 2-1 up at halftime, and I tweeted at halftime, has anyone seen Dabina? Like an idiot.
And she heard you.
And she basically, yeah, put the tweet on the dressing room locker, and then the rest is history. And Dabina probably scored arguably my favorite goal of 2020 so far. I don't know if you have any other.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I could pick probably a lot of Arsenal's goals in the first 2 weeks as some of my favourites of this year. But yeah, exceptional goal.
She nutmegs Bridget Andrzejewski, who's playing her first ever game in the NWSL. And she just nutmegs her before cracking it. It reminds me a lot of Adel Taarabt's goal versus Swansea. It's got the pre-shot nutmeg and then just an absolute thwack.
Do they do highlights as well on NWSL Twitch channel if you'd missed the game? They do, don't they not?
I'm not sure. Obviously, I'm in the United States right now, so I'm not 100% sure. I would go on the NWSL website.
I'll take a look. They definitely do highlights on the website. I think they're just very short.
They are. They're not extended highlights. It's mostly just like goals.
But we will look into that and signpost to wherever is the best place to watch some longer highlights. And I know lots of people get frustrated about in the UK how short the BBC Women's Football Show is. It's only 30 minutes, and I'm just as frustrated as you. And I think a lot of people were a bit annoyed that Brighton Man City got quite a big chunk of the show.
It was a classic.
And a lot of people thought it was, you know, deserved, but then some other people were saying, you know, you had a 9-0 and a 9-1 that deserve a lot more analysis. But unfortunately, that's the way it is at the moment. But with all the demand and amazing viewing figures and people getting annoyed on Twitter, hopefully we'll eventually convince the BBC to give it a longer time slot, 45 minutes,
what we're
an hour
saying
or something.
Is get annoyed on Twitter.
Yeah, get really
write
annoyed.
To the BBC.
Yeah.
Use your voice and you'll get a 31-minute program.
Exactly,
program.
You'll get a minute extension. Yeah, it's all the highlights. I I hate really short highlights because it's so hard to get a good sense of the game. And in a women's football show especially, it's pretty bad when we don't have time to even do more than show the goals. So if, yeah, any extended highlights will put you in that direction. But you can, on the FA Player, you can watch full match back if you want.
Yeah, it, yeah, so. The full night. Yeah, I did that. I did that last week. I watched the Everton match back because I wasn't able to catch them. Oh, and you should definitely check out the warm-up show as well with the Kamita twins.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. I love those guys. I've worked with them a couple of times. They're hilarious. And Molly's also just signed a contract with Enfield Town, which is really exciting. She's getting back into playing and they're doing loads of media work. So I'm sure they're going to be popping up with more stuff. And they did
Two of our favourite siblings. Hall of Fame. Siblings of Hall of Fame.
And they did a hilarious little lockdown show with some of the players. So yeah, definitely check that out.
The Dash, just quickly going back to the NWSL, the Dash losing means they are now 4 years and counting since they won a game without Rachel Daly. So something to keep an eye on.
Damning.
I know, really damning. It was actually quite funny. I was watching their last game where they won and you got two goals from Carly Lloyd for the Houston Dash, Janine Becky and Keelia Watt, who none of those players play for the Dash anymore, but it was just kind of such a blast from the past in 2016.
I had no idea Carly Lloyd played for the Dash. There you go.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, the Dash have had big names, but they all, a bit like at City, they all kind of didn't play.
Float in and out, sort of.
And that was off the back of the Olympics, that game. It was in September of 2016. Keelia Watt, just briefly finishing on the NWSL, got a really nice assist for the Chicago Red Stars, who went one up, but ended up losing.
Hasn't scored a goal, though.
Yes, it's now 14 months and counting since Keelia Watt scored her last goal, which was for the Houston Dash. She was really, really unlucky. She had an absolutely beautiful curler from kind of the right side of the box, about 25 yards out. And Aubrey Bledsoe, who's just an absolute boss in the Washington goal, tipped it onto the bar. And I really feel for Keelia Watt because her performance level is actually pretty high at the moment. She was decent at the Challenge Cup, but just could not, you know, get on the score sheet. And she's kind of done it, you know, she's looking like she's going to do the same thing in the fall series. And the last shout out from the NWSL is just for Scarpa and Lubbert, who both scored their first professional goals, which was really, really nice to see. You know, I think the fall series, we're seeing like a little bit more experimentation, players you never heard of. So to go alongside kind of an absolute cracker from Dabina, it's good to see some of these younger players coming through. That was a really great weekend. Anything else you want to add, or shall we take a little break and then we'll come back with some news?
Let's take a little break and come back with some news.
And we're back. This is Relatively Football, and we're just going to kind of quickly go over some of the biggest stories from the week. Emil Heskey has become the ambassador for Leicester City Football Club, and he's going to be the ambassador for the women's team as well, right, Flo?
Yeah, it's really exciting. Leicester in the summer announced that they were basically going to be fully absorbing Leicester City in England, playing the Premier League, the men's team do it, fully absorbing the women's side, who had sort of had a little bit of involvement from the men's club, but had been operating as an independent club.
But in the championship,
second tier, yeah, in England. So in the summer, they announced that they were going to be absorbing the women's team into the club and making it professional, which history tells us as soon as you do that in the championship, you have a good chance of winning the league. And then since then, that was in August, and since then, they've just announced this week that Emil Heskey, absolute legend in England.
One of my favourite all-time players. I think the longer time goes, the more we look back and we're like, oh, Heskey was actually way ahead of his time. You think about, you know, someone like Olivier Giroud now.
Yeah, and came through the Leicester Academy, so has a... From Leicester, has a real affinity to the city. He is going to be an ambassador for the club, and he's going to be doing that role with the women's team, which is great. And it seems that he's going to be a bit of a mentor for them. And they've already got off to a pretty decent start in the championship, beat Blackburn in their first game, drew to all with Sheffield United, who came second last season behind Villa, probably one of the favourites for promotion, despite losing their manager. They've got Neil Redfern as manager, who briefly had a stint at Liverpool, mainly managed in men's football, was manager at Leeds United men, was manager at Liverpool Women very briefly and left because he was so pissed off with how the women's team were being run. So well done to Neil for speaking up about it. And is the partner of BT Sport commentator Lucy Ward. So they're a lovely little women's football partnership.
Do you think we'll see more, I like the way you use the word mentor. Do you think we'll see more mentors in the women's game? I was trying to think about other people like Hesley. Can you think of any? I mean, Annie Luko obviously is more of a director of sport, but I'm sure can add mentorship to some of the players. Can you think of anyone else?
So the one that sprung to mind was Katie Chapman, who since retiring has become an ambassador at Chelsea. And that includes a lot. I mean, she does like soccer schools. She also does a lot of work with their charity partner Plan. So it's quite a big role, but I imagine she also is a mentor because she's at all the women's games and she's a presence around the club. But there's no one I can think of who's like official. So I think Katie Chapman's title is sort of club ambassador, but I can't think of anyone who sort of has that mentor title who's there to give advice and stuff. I mean, it is interesting and I'm sure it'll be a bit of an eye opener for him because Phil Neville certainly said that working in women's football was a real like eye opener for him. And I think Heskey will probably experience the same thing. But for a lot of the players, it's going to be amazing to be able to talk to someone like him who had such a amazing, successful career with Leicester and with England.
Couldn't agree more. I'm very excited to see the future of Leicester City women with the help of Emma Heskey. Looking ahead to Europe and some of the exciting things going on over there, Juventus and AC Milan announced today that they're going to be playing a game in the San Siro.
Yeah, really exciting. We have seen a big growth in the domestic Italian Women's League, and I think that was reflected also in how the international team did during the World Cup. So women's football there is getting a lot stronger. And obviously Ennio Luco went and played at Juventus.
Katie Zellum as well.
Katie Zellum, yeah. Was Ennio there for one or two seasons? I can't remember.
I feel like Ennio was only there for one season.
Yeah,
but maybe.
But during her time there, Juventus did a women's game in their new Allianz Stadium. And it was really well attended. I can't remember if it sold out, but there were like 35,000 people there. And that was really successful. So I think there's been a big demand for the women's team to be played in bigger stadiums. At the moment, it's not a fully professional league. So you've got that sort of weird middle ground of the bigger clubs investing loads and winning everything like Juventus have been doing. And then the smaller clubs sort of being semi-professional. And then as soon as one bigger club decides it wants to invest, like I think Roma recently announced they were going all in, it sort of changes the dynamic a lot. But yeah, it's really exciting. I think there was a big disappointment, a bit like the WSL during the pandemic, because there had been an understanding that the Italian FA were going to work to bring back the league and help it finish, and then negotiations fell through. And the players, I remember, released a statement saying that they were really frustrated about that, and they had been promised that the FA were going to fund the testing and everything, and that was a bit of a negative. So hopefully that won't leave too much of damage on the growth that they've managed to gain.
Yeah, if you do get a chance to attend the game in the San Siro, do reach out. We'd love to hear more about what's happening over there in Italy, kind of both from the fans' point of view, media point of view, players' point of view. It's just a really exciting time to see that kind of thing happening. I want to just give a little bit of love. We already kind of talked about Fran Kirby's Fight Club, great Chelsea podcast to go and check out. But shout out Craig Hadley, incredible Birmingham City fan, real kind of celebrator of the women's game, has done a really great piece about great podcasts out there, and I don't know why, but he's put us on there, and it's just really, really sweet to see people kind of really trying to connect these dots, connect these communities. So yeah, go, he's a really good follow. Go follow Craig Hadley and check out some of those great women's podcasts. There's a lot of them out there. I want to give a little bit of heads up. We obviously have no football in England right now. This weekend we're getting a nice break off two kind of huge weeks where I feel completely out of breath and overwhelmed in a good way. But yeah, we've got no football this weekend with everyone taking an international break, but there will be some football in the NWSL. So if you are interested overseas or in the United States, North Carolina are playing Orlando Pride at 1 on the East Coast, which will be 6 p.m. in the UK. And that will be on Twitch or CBS in America. It should be a really good game. Pride, because of COVID, didn't even play in the Challenge Cup. So this is their first game since I guess September, October last year. And then that's on Saturday. And then on Sunday, Chicago are back again playing Sky Blue FC, who are from New Jersey. That's the same, going to be the same time on Sunday. So 1 p.m. on the East Coast, 6 p.m. in the UK on Twitch. And I really recommend, this is the game I'd probably check out. Chicago were really fun last week with some young players and older players. And Sky Blue, who have Freya Coombe, one of many English managers in the NWSL. She's got an amazing team, really, really fun team, playing great football together in Sky Blue. We were talking about Midge Purse last week, scoring that winner. And so if you're going to check out any game, I'd really go check out Chicago versus Sky Blue. And then after that on Sunday, again on Twitch, this is going to be Twitch in the US and Twitch worldwide. Portland are playing Utah at 3 p.m. on the East Coast and 8 p.m. in the UK. Any more, Flo?
No, yeah, we've got international camp over on this side of the world.
Rachel Daly and Millie Bright are back together.
Yeah, reunion for those two. So
big reunion.
I would just go on social media and sort of live vicariously through that, because it's just a camp, so there aren't any games for this break for England. I think some nationalities might be playing games, not 100% sure. But then when they come back, there will be the resumption of the Women's FA Cup. And yes, this season, yes, we've got two FA Cups. We've got the 2019 FA Cup.
Bring it on.
Starting from the quarterfinals, and there's some really good fixtures that hopefully some of them will be on TV. Not 100% sure yet. They normally show one, maybe. And then we're going to obviously be starting the 2020-2021 competition. So, yeah, all the fun of a COVID-impacted season. But lots of great women's football to look forward to. And we will be having, hopefully next week, our first ever SIBS interview.
Yeah, there's been a bit of delay, but we're gonna have some really exciting interviews coming up with some siblings sharing stories about the game, kind of how they play, watch, and involve themselves in women's football, or what the game means to them. I think that's about it. You can follow me, you can follow the show at RelativelyFoot, at RelativelyFootball on Instagram. You can follow me at Theodore_LH. Flo, where can people find you?
A Floyd Tweet on Twitter and Floyd Insta on Instagram. Very on brand, but that's where you can find me.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. You know, give us any questions you want us to talk about on the show, or like, just, we love your feedback. Really appreciate everyone that's listened so far. It's been really fun and very humbling. Quick shout out. We've had a lot of people talking about the music on the show. So the song is by The Convenience, a band from New Orleans, friends of mine, and they do have some music up online on sort of Apple or Spotify, wherever you get your music. But the song is currently unreleased, and we'll let you know if there's any way we can get the kind of full release version out there for you. Otherwise, great to see you, Flo. Give my love to London, wear a mask, be safe, and goodbye.